This is Audible.
Rich Dad on Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Rich Dad's Guide to Investing. What the rich invest in that the poor and middle class do not. By Robert T. Kiyosaki. Performed by Tim Wheeler.
A father's advice on investing. Years ago, I asked my rich dad, "What advice would you give to the average investor?" His reply was, "Don't be average." The 90-10 rule of money. Most of us have heard of the 80-20 rule. In other words, 80% of our success comes from 20% of our efforts. Originated by the Italian economist Vilfredo Pareto in 1897, it is also known as the principle of least effort. Rich Dad agreed with the 80-20 rule for overall success in all areas but money. When it came to money, he believed in the 90-10 rule. Rich Dad noticed that 10% of the people had 90% of the money. He pointed out that in the world of movies, 10% of the actors made 90% of the money. He also noticed that 10% of the athletes made 90% of the money, as did 10% of the musicians. The same 90-10 rule applies to the world of investing, which is why his advice to investors was, "Don't be average." An article in the Wall Street Journal recently validated his opinion. It stated that 90% of all corporate shares of stock in America are owned by just 10% of the people. This audiobook explains how some of the investors in the 10% have gained 90% of the wealth and how you might be able to do the same. Introduction. What you will learn from listening to this audiobook. The Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, of the United States defines an individual as an accredited investor if the individual has $200,000 or more in annual income, or $300,000 or more in annual income as a couple, or $1 million or more in net worth. The SEC established these requirements to protect the average investor from some of the worst and most risky investments in the world. The problem is that these investor requirements also shield the average investor from some of the best investments in the world, which is one reason why Rich Dad's advice to the average investor was, "Don't be average." Starting with nothing. This audiobook begins with my return from Vietnam in 1973. I had less than a year to go before I was going to be discharged from the Marine Corps. That meant that in less than a year, I was going to have no job, no money, and no assets. So, this audiobook begins at a point that many of you may recognize, and that is a point of starting with nothing. All I had in 1973 was the dream of someday being very rich and becoming an investor who could qualify to invest in the investments of the rich. These are investments that few people ever hear about, that are not written about in the financial newspapers, and are not sold over the counter by investment brokers. This audiobook begins when I had nothing but a dream and my rich dad's guidance to become an investor. This audiobook should be of interest to you whether you have very little money to invest or have a lot to invest, whether you know very little about investing or you know a lot about investing. It is about a very complex subject, but written as simply as possible. It is written for anyone interested in becoming a better informed investor, regardless of how much money they have. If this is your first audiobook on investing, and you are concerned that it might be too complicated, please do not be concerned. All I ask is that you have a willingness to learn and listen to this audiobook from the beginning to the end with an open mind. If there are parts of the audiobook that you do not understand, then just listen to the words and continue on to the end. Even if you do not understand everything, you will know more about the subject of investing than many people who are currently investing in the market just by listening all the way through to the conclusion. In fact, by listening to the entire audiobook, you will know a lot more about investing than many people who are being paid to give their investment advice. This audiobook begins with the simple and goes into the sophisticated without getting too bogged down in detail and complexity. In many ways, this audiobook starts simple and remains simple, although it covers some very sophisticated investor strategies. This is a story of a rich man guiding a young man with pictures and diagrams to help explain the often confusing subject of investing. The 90-10 Rule of Money. My rich dad appreciated the Italian economist Vilfredo Pareto's discovery of the 80-20 rule, also known as the principle of least effort. Yet when it came to money, rich dad was more aware of the 90-10 rule, which says that 10% of the people make 90% of the money. I am personally concerned because more and more families are counting on their investments to support them in the future. The problem is that while more people are investing, very few of them are well-educated investors. When the market crashes, what will happen to all these new investors? The federal government of the United States insures our savings from catastrophic loss, but it does not insure our investments. That is why, when I asked my rich dad, "What advice would you give the average investor?" his reply was, "Don't be average." How not to be average. I became very aware of the subject of investing when I was just 12 years old. Up until that age, the concept of investing was not really in my head. Baseball and football were on my mind, but not investing. I had heard the word, but I had not really paid much attention until I saw what the power of investing could do. I remember walking along a beach with the man I call my rich dad and his son Mike, my best friend. Rich Dad was showing his son and me a piece of real estate he had just purchased. Although only 12 years old, I realized that my rich dad had just purchased one of the most valuable pieces of property in our town. Even though I was young, I knew that oceanfront property with a sandy beach in front of it was more valuable than property without a beach on it. My first thought was, how can Mike's dad afford such an expensive piece of property? I stood there with the waves washing over my bare feet, looking at a man the same age as my real dad who was making one of the biggest financial investments of his life. I was in awe of how he could afford such a piece of land. I knew that my dad made much more money because he was a highly paid government official with a bigger salary. But I also knew that my real dad could never afford to buy land right on the ocean. So, how could Mike's dad afford this land when my dad couldn't? Little did I know that my career as a professional investor had begun the moment I realized the power built into the word investing. Some 40 years after that walk on the beach with my rich dad and his son Mike, I now have people asking me many of the same questions I began asking that day. In the investment classes I teach, people ask me questions similar to those I began asking my rich dad. Questions such as, how can I invest when I don't have any money? I have $10,000 to invest. What would you recommend I invest in? Do you recommend investing in real estate, mutual funds, or stocks? Can I buy real estate or stocks without any money? Doesn't it take money to make money? Isn't investing risky? How do you get such high returns with low risk? Can I invest with you? People are beginning to realize the power hidden in the word investing. Many want to find out how to acquire that power for themselves. Many of these questions will be answered for you by the time you've finished listening to this audiobook. And if some are not answered here, it is my hope that you are inspired to dig further yourself to find the answers that work for you. Over 40 years ago, the most important thing my rich dad did for me was spark my curiosity on this subject of investing. My curiosity was aroused when I realized that my best friend's dad, a man who made less money than my real dad, at least when comparing paycheck to paycheck, could afford to acquire investments that only rich people could afford. I realized that my rich dad had a power my real dad did not have, and I wanted to have that power also. Many people are afraid of this power and stay away from it, and many even fall victim to it. Instead of running from the power or condemning it by saying such things as, the rich exploit the poor, or investing is risky, or I'm not interested in becoming rich, I became curious. It is my curiosity and my desire to acquire this power, also known as knowledge and abilities, that set me off on a lifelong path of inquiry and learning. Investing like a rich person. While this audiobook may not give you all the technical answers you may want, the intention is to offer you an insight into how many of the richest self-made individuals made their money and went on to acquire great wealth. Standing on the beach at the age of 12, looking at my rich dad's newly acquired piece of real estate, my mind was opened to a world of possibilities that did not exist in my home. I realized that it was not money that made my rich dad a rich investor. I realized that my rich dad had a thinking pattern that was almost exactly opposite and often contradicted the thinking of my real dad. I realized that I needed to understand the thinking pattern of my rich dad if I wanted to have the same financial power he had. I knew that if I thought like him, I would be rich forever. I also knew that if I did not think like him, I would never really be rich, regardless of how much money I had. Rich Dad had just invested in one of the most expensive pieces of land in our town, and he had no money. I realized that wealth was a way of thinking and not a dollar amount in the bank. It is this thinking pattern of rich investors that I want to deliver to you in this audiobook. Rich Dad's answer. Standing on the beach 40 years ago, I finally worked up the courage to ask my rich dad, how can you afford to buy these 10 acres of very expensive oceanfront land when my dad can't afford it? Rich Dad then gave me an answer I have never forgotten. He put his arm around me and we turned and started walking down the beach at the waterline. Rich Dad began to warmly explain to me the fundamentals of the way he thought about money and investing. His answer began with, I can't afford to buy this land either, but my business can. We walked on the beach for an hour that day, Rich Dad with his son on one side and me on his other side. My investor lessons had begun. Some time ago, I was teaching a 3-day investment course in Sydney, Australia. The first day and a half, I discussed the ins and outs of building a business. Finally, in frustration, a participant raised his hand and said, I came to learn about investing. Why are you spending so much time on business? My reply was, there are two reasons. Reason number one is that what we ultimately invest in is a business. If you invest in stocks, you are investing in a business. If you buy a piece of real estate, such as an apartment building, that building is also a business. If you buy a bond, you are also investing in a business. In order to be a good investor, you first need to be good at business. Reason number two is that the best way to invest is to have your business buy your investments for you. The worst way to invest is to invest as an individual. The average investor knows very little about business and often invests as an individual. That is why I spend so much time on the subject of business in an investment course. And that is why this audiobook will spend some time on how to build a business as well as how to analyze a business. I will also spend time on investing through a business because that is how Rich Dad taught me to invest. As he said to me 40 years ago, I can't afford to buy this land either, but my business can. In other words, my rich dad's rule was, my business buys my investments. Most people are not rich because they invest as individuals and not as business owners. In this audiobook, you will see why most of the 10% who own 90% of the stocks are business owners and invest through their businesses, and how you can do the same. I call these people 90-10 investors in this audiobook. Later in the course, the individual who had questioned me understood why I spent so much time talking about business. As the course progressed, that individual and the class began to realize that the richest investors in the world do not buy investments. Most of the 90-10 investors created their own investments. The reason we have billionaires who are still in their 20s is not because they bought investments. They created investments, called businesses, that millions of people want to buy. Nearly every day, I hear people say, "I have an idea for a new product that will make millions." Unfortunately, most of those creative ideas will never be turned into fortunes. The second half of this audiobook will focus on how the 10% turn their ideas into multi-million and even multi-billion dollar businesses that other investors invest in. That is why Rich Dad spent so much time teaching me how to build businesses, as well as how to analyze businesses to invest in. So if you have an idea that you think could make you rich, or maybe even help you join the 90-10 Investor Club, the second half of this audiobook is for you. Buy, hold, and pray. Over the years, Rich Dad pointed out that investing means different things to different people. Today, I often hear people saying such things as, "I just bought 500 shares of XYZ company for $5 a share. The price went up to $15 and I sold it. I made $5,000 in less than a week." "My husband and I buy old houses and we fix them up and sell them for a profit." "I trade commodity futures." "I have over $1 million in my retirement account." "Safe as money in the bank." "I have a diversified portfolio." "I'm investing for the long term." As Rich Dad said, investing means different things to different people. While the above statements reflect different types of investment products and procedures, Rich Dad did not invest in the ways reflected in the preceding statements. He said, "Most people are not investors. Most people are speculators or gamblers. Most people have the buy, hold, and pray mentality. Most investors live in the hope that the market stays up and live in fear of the market crashing. A true investor makes money regardless of whether the market is going up or crashing down. They make money regardless of whether they are winning or losing. The average investor does not know how to do that, and that is why most investors are average investors who fall into the 90% that make only 10% of the money. More than buying, holding, and praying. Investing meant more to Rich Dad than buying, holding, and praying. This audiobook will cover the following subjects. 1. The 10 investor controls that can reduce risk and increase profits. Rich Dad said, investing is not risky. Being out of control is risky. 2. The 5 phases of Rich Dad's plan to guide me from having no money to investing with a lot of money. Phase 1 of Rich Dad's plan was preparing my mind to become a rich investor. This is a simple yet very important phase for anyone who wants to invest with confidence. 3. The different tax laws for different investors. In Rich Dad's Cash Flow Quadrant book, I cover the 4 different people found in the world of business. The E stands for employee. The S stands for self-employed or small business. The B stands for business owner. The I stands for investor. Rich Dad encouraged me to invest from the B quadrant because the tax laws are better for investing. Rich Dad always said, the tax laws are not fair. They are written for the rich and by the rich. If you want to be rich, you need to use the same tax laws the rich use. One of the reasons that 10% of the people control most of the wealth is that only 10% know which tax laws to use. In 1943, the federal government plugged most tax loopholes for all employees. In 1986, the federal government took away the tax loopholes from individuals in the S quadrant, individuals such as doctors, lawyers, accountants, engineers, and architects who had previously enjoyed them. In other words, another reason that 10% of the investors make 90% of the money is that only 10% of all investors know how to invest from the different quadrants in order to gain different tax advantages. The average investor often only invests from one quadrant. 4. Why and how a true investor will make money regardless of whether the market goes up or down. 5. The difference between fundamental investing and technical investing. 6. Five types of top-level investors. In Rich Dad's Cash Flow Quadrant, I went into the five levels of investors. This audiobook classifies the top two levels of investors, professional and capitalist, into the following five types of investors. The accredited investor, the qualified investor, the sophisticated investor, the inside investor, the ultimate investor. By the end of this audiobook, you will know the different skill and education requirements for each of these investors. 7. The difference between not having enough money and having too much money. Many people say, "When I make a lot of money, my money problems will be over." What they fail to realize is that having too much money is as big a problem as not having enough money. In this audiobook, you will learn the difference between the two kinds of money problems. One problem is the problem of not enough money. The other problem is the problem of too much money. Few people realize how big a problem having too much money can be. One of the reasons so many people go broke after making a lot of money is that they do not know how to handle the problem of too much money. In this audiobook, you will learn how to start with the problem of not having enough money, how to make a lot of money, and then how to handle the problem of too much money. In other words, this audiobook will not only teach you how to make a lot of money, but more importantly, it will teach you how to keep it. As Rich Dad said, "What good is making a lot of money if you wind up losing it all?" A stockbroker friend of mine once said to me, "The average investor does not make money in the market. I have seen so many investors make money one year and give it all back the next year." 8. How to make much more than just $200,000, the minimum income level to begin investing in the investments of the rich. Rich Dad said to me, "Money is just a point of view. How can you be rich if you think $200,000 is a lot of money? If you want to be a rich investor, you need to see that $200,000, the minimum dollar amount to qualify as an accredited investor, is just a drop in the bucket." And that is why Phase 1 of this audiobook is so important. Phase 1 of this audiobook, which is preparing yourself mentally to be a rich investor, has a short mental quiz for you at the end of each chapter. Although the quiz questions are simple, they are designed to have you think and maybe discuss your answers with the people you love. It was the soul-searching questions my rich dad asked me that helped me find the answers I was looking for. In other words, many of the answers I was looking for regarding the subject of investing were really inside me all along. What makes the 90-10 investor different? One of the most important aspects of this audiobook is the mental differences between the average investor and the 90-10 investor. Rich Dad often said, "If you want to be rich, just find out what everyone else is doing and do exactly the opposite." As you listen to this audiobook, you will find out that most of the differences between the 10% of investors who make 90% of the money and the 90% that make only 10% of the money are not what they invest in, but the different ways they think. For example, most investors say, don't take risks. The rich investor takes risks. Most investors say, diversify. The rich investor focuses. The average investor tries to minimize debt. The rich investor increases debt in their favor. The average investor tries to decrease expenses. Rich investors know how to increase expenses to make themselves richer. The average investor has a job. The rich investor creates jobs. The average investor works hard. The rich investor works less and less to make more and more. The other side of the coin. So, an important aspect of listening to this audiobook is to notice when your thoughts are often 180 degrees out from the guiding thoughts of my rich dad. Rich Dad said, one of the reasons so few people become rich is that they become set in one way of thinking. They think there is only one way to think or do something. While the average investor thinks, play it safe and don't take risks, the rich investor must also think about how to improve skills so he or she can take more risks. Rich Dad called this kind of thinking, thinking on both sides of the coin. He went on saying, the rich investor must have more flexible thinking than the average investor. For example, while both the average investor and rich investor must think about safety, the rich investor must also think about how to take more risks. While the average investor thinks about cutting down debt, the rich investor is thinking about how to increase debt. While the average investor lives in fear of market crashes, the rich investor looks forward to market crashes. While this may sound like a contradiction to the average investor, it is this contradiction that makes the rich investor rich. As you listen to this audiobook, be aware of the contradictions in thinking between average investors and rich investors. As Rich Dad said, the rich investor is very aware that there are two sides to every coin. The average investor sees only one side. And it is the side the average investor does not see that keeps the average investor average and the rich investor rich. The second part of this audiobook is about the other side of the coin. Do you want to be more than an average investor? This audiobook is much more than just an audiobook about investing, hot tips, and magic formulas. One of the main purposes for writing it is to offer you the opportunity to gain a different point of view on the subject of investing. It begins with my returning from Vietnam in 1973 and preparing myself to begin investing as a rich investor. In 1973, Rich Dad began teaching me how to acquire the same financial power he possessed, a power I first became aware of at the age of 12. While standing on the beach in front of my Rich Dad's latest investment 40 years ago, I realized that when it came to investing, the difference between my Rich Dad and my poor dad went far deeper than merely how much money each man had to invest. The difference is first found in a person's deep desire to be much more than just an average investor. If you have such a desire, continue listening. Phase 1. Are you mentally prepared to be an investor? Chapter 1. Investor Lesson Number 1. What should I invest in? In 1973, I returned home from my tour of Vietnam. I felt fortunate to have been assigned to a base in Hawaii near home rather than to a base on the East Coast. After settling in at the Marine Corps Air Station, I called my friend Mike and we set up a time to have lunch together with his dad, the man I call my rich dad. Mike was anxious to show me his new baby and his new home, so we agreed to have lunch at his house the following Saturday. When Mike's limousine came to pick me up at the drab gray base, BOQ, Bachelor Officers Quarters, I began to realize how much had changed since we had graduated together from high school in 1965. "Welcome home," Mike said as I walked into the foyer of his beautiful home with marble floors. Mike was beaming from ear to ear as he held his 7-month-old son. "Glad you made it back in one piece." "So am I," I replied as I looked past Mike at the shimmering blue Pacific Ocean, which touched the white sand in front of his home. The home was spectacular. It was a tropical one-level mansion with all the grace and charm of old and new Hawaiian living. There were beautiful Persian carpets, tall green potted plants, and a large pool that was surrounded on three sides by his home, with the ocean on the fourth side. It was very open, breezy, and the model of gracious island living, with the finest of detail. The home fit my fantasies of living the luxurious life in Hawaii. "Meet my son James," said Mike. "Oh," I said in a startled voice. I had slipped into a trance taking in the stunning beauty of this home. My jaw must have been hanging open. "What a cute kid," I replied, as any person should reply when looking at a new baby. But as I stood there making faces at a baby blankly staring back at me, my mind was still in shock at how much had changed in 8 years. I was living on a military base in old barracks, sharing a room with three other messy beer-drinking young pilots, while Mike was living in a multi-million-dollar estate with his gorgeous wife and newborn baby. "Come on in," Mike continued. "Dad and Connie are waiting for us on the patio." The lunch was spectacular and served by their full-time maid. I sat there enjoying the meal, the scenery, and the company when I thought about my three roommates who were probably dining at the officers' mess hall at that very moment. Since it was Saturday, lunch on the base was probably a sub sandwich and a bowl of soup. After the pleasantries and catching up on old times, Rich Dad said, "As you can see, Mike has done an excellent job investing the profits from the business. We have made more money in the last 2 years than I made in the first 20. There is a lot of truth to the statement that the first million is the hardest." "So business has been good?" I asked, encouraging further disclosure on how their fortunes had jumped so radically. "Business is excellent," said Rich Dad. "These new 747s bring so many tourists from all over the world to Hawaii that business cannot help but keep growing. But our real success is from our investments more than from our business, and Mike is in charge of the investments." "Congratulations," I said to Mike. "Well done." "Thank you," said Mike, "but I can't take all the credit. It's Dad's investment formula that is really working. I'm just doing exactly what he has been teaching us about business and investing for all these years." "It must be paying off," I said. "I can't believe you live here in the richest neighborhood in the city. Do you remember when we were poor kids running with our surfboards between houses trying to get to the beach?" Mike laughed. "Yes, I do. And I remember being chased by all those mean old rich guys. Now I'm the mean old rich guy who's chasing those kids away. Who would have ever thought that you and I would be living..." Mike suddenly stopped talking once he realized what he was saying. That while he was living here, I was living on the other side of the island in drab military barracks. "I'm sorry," he said. "I didn't mean to..." "No apologies necessary," I said with a grin. "I'm happy for you. I'm glad you're so wealthy and successful. You deserve it because you took the time to learn to run the business. I'll be out of the barracks as soon as my contract with the Marine Corps is done." Rich Dad, sensing the tension between Mike and me, broke in and said, "And he's done a better job than I have. I'm very proud of him. I'm proud of both my son and his wife. They are a great team and have earned everything they have. Now that you're back from the war, it's your turn, Robert." "May I invest with you?" "I'd love to invest with you," I eagerly replied. "I saved nearly $3,000 while I was in Vietnam, and I'd like to invest it before I spend it. Can I invest with you?" "Well, I'll give you the name of a good stockbroker," Rich Dad said. "I'm sure he'll give you some good advice, maybe even a hot tip or two." "No, no, no," I said. "I want to invest in what you are investing in. Come on, you know how long I've known you two. I know you've always got something that you're working on or investing in. I don't want to go to a stockbroker. I want to be in a deal with you guys." The room went silent as I waited for Rich Dad or Mike to respond. The silence grew into tension. "Did I say something wrong?" I finally asked. "No," said Mike. "Dad and I are investing in a couple of new projects that are exciting, but I think it is best you call one of our stockbrokers first and begin investing with him." Again, there was silence, punctuated only by the clinking of the dishes and glasses as the maid cleared the table. Mike's wife, Connie, excused herself and took the baby to another room. "I don't understand," I said. Turning to Rich Dad more than Mike, I continued, "All these years I've worked right alongside the two of you building your business. I've worked for close to nothing. I went to college as you advised, and I fought for my country as you said a young man should. Now that I'm old enough and I finally have a few dollars to invest, you seem to hesitate when I say I want to invest in what you invest in. I don't understand. Why the cold shoulder? Are you trying to snub me or push me away? Don't you want me to get rich like you?" "It's not a cold shoulder," Mike replied, "and we would never snub you or not wish you to attain great wealth. It's that things are different now." Rich Dad nodded his head in slow and silent agreement. "We'd love to have you invest in what we invest in," Rich Dad finally said, "but it would be against the law." "Against the law?" I echoed in loud disbelief. "Are you two doing something illegal?" "No, no," said Rich Dad with a chuckle. "We would never do anything illegal. It's too easy to get rich legally to ever risk going to jail for something illegal. And it is because we want to always remain on the right side of the law that we say it would be illegal for you to invest with us," said Mike. "It's not illegal for Mike and me to invest in what we invest in, but it would be illegal for you," Rich Dad tried to summarize. "Why?" I asked. "Because you are not rich," said Mike softly and gently. "What we invest in is for rich people only." Mike's words went straight through me. Since he was my best friend, I knew they were difficult words for him to say to me. And although he said them as gently as possible, they still hurt and cut like a knife through my heart. I was beginning to sense how wide the financial gap between us was. While his dad and my dad both started out with nothing, he and his dad had achieved great wealth. My dad and I were still from the other side of the tracks. I could sense that this big house with the lovely white sand beach was still far away from me, and the distance was measured in more than miles. Leaning back in my chair and crossing my arms in introspective thought, I sat there nodding quietly as I pondered that moment in our lives. We were both 25 years old, but in many ways, Mike was 25 years ahead of me financially. My own dad had just been more or less fired from his government job, and he was starting over with nothing at age 52. I had not even begun. "Are you okay?" asked Rich Dad gently. "Yeah, I'm okay," I replied, doing my best to hide the hurt that came from feeling sorry for myself and for my family. "I'm just doing some deep thinking and some soul searching," I said, mustering a brave grin. The room was silent as we listened to the waves and as the cool breeze blew through the beautiful home. Mike, Rich Dad, and I sat there while I came to terms with the message and its reality. "So I can't invest with you because I'm not rich," I finally said as I came out of my trance. "And if I did invest in what you invest in, it would be against the law." Rich Dad and Mike Dad nodded. "In some instances," Mike added. "And who made this law?" I asked. "The federal government," Mike replied. "The SEC," Rich Dad added. "The SEC," I asked. "What is the SEC?" "The Securities and Exchange Commission," Rich Dad responded. "It was created in the 1930s under the direction of Joseph Kennedy, father of the late President John Kennedy." "Why was it created?" I asked. Rich Dad laughed. "It was created to protect the public from wild, unscrupulous dealmakers, businessmen, brokers, and investors." "Why do you laugh?" I asked. "It seems like that would be a good thing to do." "Yes, it is a very good thing," Rich Dad replied, still chuckling a little. prior to the stock market crash of 1929, many shady, slippery, and shoddy investments were being sold to the public. A lot of lying and misinformation was being put forth, so the SEC was formed to be the watchdog. It is the agency that helps make, as well as enforce, the rules. It serves a very important role. Without the SEC, there would be chaos. "So why do you laugh?" I persisted. "Because while it protects the public from the bad investments, it also keeps the public out of the best investments," replied Rich Dad in a more serious tone. "So if the SEC protects the public from the worst investments and from the best investments, what does the public invest in?" I asked. "The sanitized investments," Rich Dad replied, "the investments that follow the guidelines of the SEC." "Well, what is wrong with that?" I asked. "Nothing," said Rich Dad. "I think it's a good idea. We must have rules and enforce the rules. The SEC does that." "But why the chuckle?" I asked. "I've known you too many years, and I know you are holding back something that is causing you to laugh." "I've already told you," said Rich Dad. "I chuckle because in protecting the public from the bad investments, the SEC also protects the public from the best investments." "Which is one of the reasons the rich get richer?" I asked tenuously. "You got it," said Rich Dad. "I chuckle because I see the irony in the big picture. People invest because they want to get rich, but because they're not rich, they're not allowed to invest in the investments that could make them rich. Only if you're rich can you invest in a rich person's investments, and so the rich get richer. To me, that is ironic." "But why is it done this way?" I asked. "Is it to protect the poor and middle class from the rich?" "No, not necessarily," Mike responded. "I think it is really to protect the poor and the middle class from themselves." "Why do you say that?" I asked. "Because there are many more bad deals than good deals. If a person is not aware, all deals, good and bad, look the same. It takes a great deal of education and experience to sort the more sophisticated investments into good and bad investments. To be sophisticated means you have the ability to know what makes one investment good and the others dangerous. And most people simply do not have that education and experience," said Rich Dad. "Mike, why don't you bring out the latest deal we are considering?" Mike left the table for his office and returned with a 3-ring binder that was about 2 inches thick, filled with pages, pictures, figures, and maps. "This is an example of something we would consider investing in," said Mike as he sat down. "It is known as a non-registered security. This particular investment is sometimes called a private placement memorandum." My mind went numb as Mike flipped through the pages and showed me the graphs, charts, maps, and pages of written text that describe the risks and rewards of the investment. I felt drowsy as Mike explained what he was looking at and why he thought it was such a great investment opportunity. Rich Dad, seeing me begin to fade away with the overload of unfamiliar information, stopped Mike and said, "This is what I wanted Robert to see." Rich Dad then pointed to a small paragraph at the front of the book that read, "Exemptions from the Securities Act of 1933. "This is what I want you to understand," he said. I leaned forward to be better able to read the fine print his finger was pointing to. The fine print said, "This investment is for accredited investors only. An accredited investor is generally accepted to be someone who has a net worth of $1 million or more, or has had an annual income of $200,000 or more in each of the most recent years, or $300,000 jointly with a spouse, and who has a reasonable expectation of reaching the same income level in the current year." Leaning back in my chair, I said, "This is why you say I cannot invest in what you invest in. This investment is for rich people only." "Or people with high incomes," said Mike. "Not only are these guidelines tough, but the minimum amount you can invest in this investment is $35,000. That is how much each investment unit, as it is called, costs." "$35,000," I said with a gasp. "That is a lot of money and a lot of risk. You mean that is the least someone can invest in this deal? Rich Dad nodded. How much does the government pay you as a Marine Corps pilot? I was earning about $12,000 a year with flight pay and combat pay in Vietnam. I really don't know what my pay will be here now that I am stationed in Hawaii. I might get some COLA, cost of living allowance, but it sure isn't going to be much, and it certainly will not cover the cost of living in Hawaii. So for you to have saved $3,000 was quite an accomplishment, said Rich Dad, doing his best to cheer me up. You saved nearly 25% of your gross income. I nodded, yet silently I realized how very, very far behind I was from becoming a so-called accredited investor. I realized that even if I achieved the rank of general in the Marine Corps, I would probably not earn enough money to be considered an accredited investor. So what should I do? I finally asked. Why can't I just give you my $3,000 and you combine it with your money and we split the profits when the deal pays off? We could do that, said Rich Dad, but I wouldn't recommend it. Not for you, anyway. Why? I asked. Why not for me? You already have a pretty good financial education foundation, so you can go way beyond just being an accredited investor. If you want, you could become a sophisticated investor. Then you will find wealth far beyond your wildest dreams. Accredited investor? Sophisticated investor? What's the difference? I asked, actually feeling a spark of renewed hope. Good question, Mike said with a smile, sensing that his friend was coming out of a slump. An accredited investor is by definition someone who qualifies because he or she has money. That is why an accredited investor is often called a qualified investor, Rich Dad explained. But money alone does not qualify you to be a sophisticated investor. What is the difference? I asked. Well, did you see the headlines in yesterday's newspaper about the Hollywood movie star who lost millions in an investment scam? Asked Rich Dad. I nodded my head. Yes, I did. Not only did he lose millions, he had to pay the tax department for untaxed income that went into that deal. Well, that is an example of an accredited or qualified investor, Rich Dad continued. But just because you have money does not mean you're a sophisticated investor. This is why we often hear of so many high-income people such as doctors, lawyers, rock stars, and professional athletes losing money in less-than-sound investments. They have the money, but they lack the sophistication. They have money, but don't know how to invest it safely and for high returns. All the deals look the same to them. They can't tell a good investment from a bad one. People like them should stay only in sanitized investments or hire a professional money manager they trust to invest for them. So, what is your definition of a sophisticated investor? I asked. A sophisticated investor knows the three E's, said Rich Dad. The three E's, I repeated. What are the three E's? Rich Dad then turned over the private placement memorandum we were looking at and wrote the following on the back of one of the pages. Education, experience, excess cash. Those are the three E's, he said, looking up from the page. Achieve those three items, and you will be a sophisticated investor. Looking at the three items, I said, so the movie star had excess cash, but he lacked the first two items. Rich Dad nodded. And there are many people with the right education, but they lack the experience. And without real-life experience, they often lack the excess cash. People like that often say, I know, when you explain things to them, but they do not do what they know, added Mike. Our banker always says, I know, to what Dad and I do, but for some reason, he does not do what he claims he knows. And that is why your banker lacks the excess cash, I said. Rich Dad and Mike nodded. Again, the room went silent as the conversation ended. All three of us were deep in our own private thoughts. Rich Dad signaled the maid for more coffee, and Mike closed the three-ring binder. I sat with my arms crossed, gazing out upon the deep blue Pacific Ocean at Mike's beautiful home and contemplating the next direction my life would take. I had finished college as my parents had wished, my military obligation would soon be over, and then I would be free to choose the path that was best for me. "What are you thinking about?" asked Rich Dad, sipping from his fresh cup of coffee. "I'm thinking about what I want to become now that I have grown up," I replied. "And what is that?" asked Mike. "I'm thinking that maybe I should become a sophisticated investor," I replied quietly, "whatever that is." "That would be a wise choice," said Rich Dad. "You've got a pretty good start, a solid financial education foundation. Now it's time to get some experience." "And how will I know when I have enough of both?" I asked. "When you have excess cash," smiled Rich Dad. With that, the three of us laughed and raised our water glasses, toasting to excess cash. Rich Dad then toasted, "and to being a sophisticated investor." "To being a sophisticated investor and to excess cash," I repeated again, silently to myself. I liked the ring of those words in my head. Mike's limousine driver was summoned, and I returned to my dingy bachelor officer's quarters to think about what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I was an adult, and I had fulfilled many of my parents' expectations, such as getting a college education and serving my country during a time of war. It was now time for me to decide what I wanted to do for myself. The thought of studying to become a sophisticated investor appealed to me. I could continue my education with Rich Dad as I gained the experience I needed. This time, my Rich Dad would be guiding me as an adult. 20 years later. By 1993, Rich Dad's wealth was split between his children, grandchildren, and their future children. For the next 100 years or so, his heirs would not have to worry about money. Mike received the primary assets of the business and has done a magnificent job of growing the balance of Rich Dad's financial empire, a financial empire that Rich Dad had built from nothing. I had seen it start and grow during my lifetime. It took me 20 years to achieve what I thought I should have been able to do in 10 years. There is some truth to the saying, "It's the first million that is the hardest." In retrospect, making $1 million was not that difficult. It's keeping the million and having it work hard for you that I found to be difficult. Nevertheless, I was able to retire in 1994 at the age of 47, financially free and with ample money to enjoy life. Yet it was not retirement that I found exciting. It was finally being able to invest as a sophisticated investor that was exciting. To be able to invest alongside Mike and Rich Dad was a goal worth achieving. That day back in 1973, when Mike and Rich Dad said I was not rich enough to invest with them, was a turning point in my life. It was the day I set the goal to become a sophisticated investor. The following is a list of some of the investments in which so-called accredited investors and sophisticated investors invest. Private placements. Real estate syndication and limited partnerships. Pre-initial public offerings, IPOs. IPOs. While available to all investors, IPOs are not usually easily accessible. Subprime financing. Mergers and acquisitions. Loans for startups. Hedge funds. For the average investor, these investments are too risky. Not because the investment itself is necessarily risky, but because all too often, the average investor lacks sufficient education, experience, and excess capital to handle the exigencies of the investment. I now tend to side with the SEC and agree that it is better to protect unqualified investors by restricting their access to these types of investments. This is because I made some errors and false steps along the way and know that others may do the same. As a sophisticated investor today, I now invest in such ventures. If you know what you're doing, the risk is very low while the potential reward can be huge. Investments such as these are where the rich routinely invest their money. Although I have taken some losses, the returns on the investments that do well have been spectacular, far exceeding the few losses. A 35% return is normal, but returns of 1,000% and more are occasionally achieved. I would rather invest in these investments than in others because I find them more exciting and more challenging. It's not simply a matter of buy 100 shares of this or sell 100 shares of that, nor is it, is the PE high or is the PE low? That is not what being a sophisticated investor is about. Investing in these investments is about getting very close to the engine of capitalism. In fact, some of the investments listed here are venture capital investments which, for the average investor, are far too risky. In reality, the investments are not risky. It's the lack of education, experience, and excess cash that makes it risky for the average investor. The Path. This audiobook is not necessarily about investments. This audiobook is specifically about the investor and the path to becoming a sophisticated investor. It is about your finding the path that's right for you to acquire the three E's: education, experience, and excess cash. Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a book about my educational path as a child. Cash Flow Quadrant is my educational path as a young adult between the years 1973 and 1994. This audiobook, Rich Dad's Guide to Investing, builds on the lessons from previous years and converts the lessons into the three E's so that you can qualify as a sophisticated investor. In 1973, I barely had $3,000 to invest, and I did not have much education and real-life experience. By 1994, I had become a sophisticated investor. Many years ago, Rich Dad said, "Just as there are houses for the rich, the poor, and the middle class, there are investments for each of them. If you want to invest in investments that the rich invest in, you have to be more than rich. You need to become a sophisticated investor, not just a rich person who invests." The five phases of becoming a sophisticated investor. Rich Dad broke my development program into five distinct phases, which I have organized into phases, lessons, and chapters. The phases are: 1. Are you mentally prepared to be an investor? 2. What type of investor do you want to become? 3. How do you build a strong business? 4. Who is a sophisticated investor? 5. Giving it back. This book is written as a guide. It will not give you specific answers. The purpose of this book is to help you understand what questions to ask. And if this book does that, it has done its job. Rich Dad said, "You cannot teach someone to be a sophisticated investor, but a person can learn to become a sophisticated investor. It's like learning to ride a bicycle. I cannot teach you to ride a bicycle, but you can learn to ride a bicycle. Learning to ride a bicycle requires risk, trial and error, and proper guidance. The same is true with investing. If you do not want to take risks, then you are saying you do not want to learn. And if you do not want to learn, then I cannot teach you." And if you are looking for a book on hot investment tips or how to get rich quick or the secret investment formula of the rich, this book is not for you. This book is really about learning more than investing. It is for people who are students of investing, students who seek their own path to wealth rather than look for the easy road to wealth. This book is about Rich Dad's five phases of development, the five phases that he went through and that I am currently going through. If you are a student of great wealth, you may notice while listening to this book that Rich Dad's five phases are the same five phases that the richest business people and investors in the world went through in order to become very, very rich. Bill Gates, founder of Microsoft, Warren Buffett, America's richest investor, and Thomas Edison, founder of General Electric, all went through these five phases. They are the same five phases that the young new millionaires and billionaires of the internet are currently going through while still in their 20s and 30s. The only difference is that because of the information age, these young people went through the same phases faster, and maybe you can as well. Are you part of the revolution? Great wealth, vast fortunes, and mega-rich families were created during the Industrial Revolution. The same is going on today during the Information Revolution. I find it interesting that today we have self-made multimillionaires and billionaires who are 20, 30, and 40 years of age, yet we still have people 40 and over who have a tough time hanging on to $50,000 a year jobs. One reason for this great disparity is the shift from the industrial age to the information age. When we shifted into the industrial age, people like Henry Ford and Thomas Edison became billionaires. Today, in the information age, we have Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg, and the founders of internet companies becoming young millionaires and billionaires. Today's 20-somethings will soon be passing Bill Gates in wealth. That is the power of a shift in ages, the shift from the industrial age to the information age. It has been said that there is nothing so powerful as an idea whose time has come, and there is nothing so detrimental than someone who is still thinking old ideas. For you, this audiobook may be about looking at old ideas and possibly finding new ideas for wealth. It may also be about a paradigm shift in your life. It may be about a transition as radical as the shift from the industrial age to the information age. It may be about defining a new financial path for your life. It may be about thinking more like a business person and investor rather than an employee or a self-employed person. It took me years to go through the phases, and in fact, I am still going through them. After listening to this audiobook, you may consider going through the same five phases, or you may decide that this developmental path is not for you. If you decide to embark upon the same path, how fast you choose to go through these five phases of development is up to you. Remember that this audiobook is not about getting rich quickly. The choice to undergo such a personal development and education program begins in phase one, the phase of mental preparation. Are you mentally prepared to be an investor? Rich Dad often said, "Money will be anything you want it to be." What he meant was that money comes from our minds, our thoughts. If a person says money is hard to get, it will probably be hard to get. If a person says, "Oh, I'll never be rich," or "It's really hard to get rich," it will probably be true for that person. If a person says the only way to get rich is to work hard, then that person will probably work hard. If the person says, "If I had a lot of money, I would put it in the bank because I wouldn't know what to do with it," then it will probably happen just that way. You'd be surprised how many people think and do just that. And if a person says investing is risky, then it is. As Rich Dad said, money will be anything you want it to be. Rich Dad warned me that the mental preparation it takes to become a sophisticated investor is probably similar to the mental preparation it would take to climb Mount Everest or to prepare for the priesthood. He was kidding, yet he was putting me on notice that such an undertaking is not to be taken lightly. He said to me, "You start as I did. You start without any money. All you have is hope and a dream of attaining great wealth. While many people dream of it, only a few achieve it. Think hard and prepare mentally because you are about to learn to invest in a way that very few people are allowed to invest. You will see the investment world from the inside rather than from the outside. There are far easier paths in life and easier ways to invest. So think it over and be prepared if you decide this is the path for your life." Chapter 2. Investor Lesson Number 2. Pouring a Foundation of Wealth. Returning to the dingy gray officers' quarters on base that night was very difficult. They had been fine when I left earlier that day, but after spending the afternoon in Mike's new home, the officers' quarters seemed cheap, old, and tired. As expected, my three roommates were drinking beer and watching a baseball game on television. There were pizza boxes and beer cans everywhere. They did not say much as I passed through the shared living area. They just stared at the TV set. As I retired to my room and closed the door, I felt grateful that we all had private rooms. I had much to think about. At 25 years of age, I finally realized things that I could not understand as a kid of 9 years old, the age at which I first began working with Rich Dad. I realized that my Rich Dad had been working hard for years, pouring a solid foundation of wealth. They had started on the poor side of town, living frugally, building businesses, buying real estate, and working on their plan. I now understood that Rich Dad's plan was to become very wealthy. While Mike and I were in high school, Rich Dad had made his move by expanding to different islands of the Hawaiian chain, buying businesses and real estate. While Mike and I were in college, he made his big move and became one of the major private investors in businesses in Honolulu and parts of Waikiki. While I was flying for the Marine Corps in Vietnam, his foundation of wealth was set in place. It was a strong and firm foundation. Now, he and his family were enjoying the fruits of their labor. Instead of living in the poorest of neighborhoods on an outer island, they lived in one of the wealthiest neighborhoods in Honolulu. They did not just look rich on the surface, as many of the people in that neighborhood did. I knew that Mike and his dad were rich because they allowed me to review their audited financial statements. Not many people were given that privilege. My real dad, on the other hand, had just lost his job. He had been climbing the ladder in the state government when he fell from grace from the political machine that ran the state of Hawaii. My dad lost everything he had worked to achieve when he ran against his boss for governor and lost. He had been blacklisted from state government and was trying to start over. He had no foundation of wealth. Although he was 52 and I was 25, we were in exactly the same financial position. We had no money. We both had a college education, and we could both get another job, but when it came to real assets, we had nothing. That night, lying quietly on my bunk, I knew I had a rare opportunity to choose a direction for my life. I say rare because very few people have the luxury of comparing the life paths of two fathers and then choosing the path that was right for them. It was a choice I did not take lightly. Investments of the rich. Although many things ran through my mind that night, I was most intrigued by the idea that there were investments only for the rich, and then there were investments for everyone else. I remembered that when I was a kid working for Rich Dad, all he talked about was building his businesses. But now that he was rich, all he talked about was his investments. Investments for the rich. That day over lunch, he had explained, "The only reason I built businesses was so I could invest in the investments of the rich. The only reason you build a business is so that your business can buy your assets. Without my businesses, I could not afford to invest in the investments of the rich." Rich Dad went on to stress the difference between an employee buying an investment and a business buying an investment. He said, "Most investments are too expensive when you purchase them as an employee, but they are much more affordable if my business buys them for me." I did not know what he meant by that statement, but I knew this distinction was important. I was now curious and anxious to find out what the difference was. Rich Dad had studied corporate and tax law and had found ways to make a lot of money using the laws to his advantage. I drifted off to sleep that night, excited about calling Rich Dad in the morning. Different quadrants, different paths. When I was young, I did not know which dad to listen to when it came to the subject of money. Both were good, hardworking men. Both were strong and charismatic. Both said I should go to college and serve my country in the military. But they did not say the same things about money or give the same advice about what to become when I grew up. Now I could compare the results of the career paths chosen by my rich dad and my poor dad. My poor dad advised me, go to school, get good grades, and then find a safe, secure job with benefits. He was recommending a career path in the E and S quadrants. On the other hand, my rich dad said, learn to build businesses and invest through your businesses. He was recommending a career in the B and I quadrants. There are core emotional differences and technical differences among the people found in each of the quadrants in the cash flow quadrant. These emotional and technical differences are important because they ultimately determine which quadrant a person tends to favor and operate from. For example, a person who needs job security will most likely seek the E quadrant. In the E quadrant are people in all walks of life, from janitors to presidents of companies. A person who needs to do things on his or her own is often found in the S quadrant, the quadrant of the self-employed or small business. I also say that S stands for specialists, solo, and smart, because this is where many of the professionals, such as doctors, attorneys, accountants, and other technical consultants, are found. The Cash Flow Quadrant book explains the differences between the S quadrant, which is where most small business owners operate, and the B quadrant, which is the quadrant where big businesses are found. In this audiobook, we will go into much more detail about the technical differences, because it is here that the differences between the rich and everyone else are found. The lessons resume. I had spent many hours as a child sitting at a table in one of Rich Dad's restaurants as Rich Dad discussed the affairs of his business. At these discussions, I would sit and sip my soda while Rich Dad talked with his bankers, accountants, attorneys, stockbrokers, real estate brokers, financial planners, and insurance agents. It was the beginning of my business education. Between the ages of 9 and 18, I spent hours listening to these men and women solve intricate business problems. But those lessons around the table ended when I left for 4 years of college in New York, followed by 5 years of service with the Marine Corps. Now that my college education was complete and my military duty nearly over, I was ready to continue the lessons with Rich Dad.